Good morning.
Stay out there because he's doing the sound, I bet.
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Thank you, though.
So we're going to be right in here in this little orange section. Remember, if we looked at just chapter 17, 18 as a whole, I told you there's this structure going on, right? If you look at chapter 17, 18 in a whole, there's a structure going on here. It's a chiastic structure. What I mean by that is that there are parallels in theme or topic in one part of this passage with a parallel in theme and topic in another part of the passage. And they're packed in like this, right? So you can see here at the beginning of chapter 17, Elijah predicts the drought and Yahweh sends the drought. Well, at the end of chapter 18, Elijah predicts the rain and Yahweh sends the rain. You see that? Now, that structure gets more and more complex, and it folds in on itself. That's purposeful design, right? It was purposely designed this way. And in the very center of that, you're going to see that there's an emphasis. And the emphasis, and this is a literary technique that the Hebrew writers used in when we're looking at Hebrew Old Testament narrative. They used this because they pointed you, as it was more auditory, right? There weren't just tons of copies of this laying around. People communicated these stories orally, right? And so and your ear became attuned to it. It's like if you hear once upon a time, you can immediately think what? Right? Well, when you hear the very first word of this as a Hebrew, you know, oh, prophet story. This is a prophet story, right? And you can tell by the type of invocation what kind of prophet story. And so we're just not attuned to those things. And so what they're listening and they're hearing this. And so they use these literary techniques as they go back and reflect on it to help point the reader toward what's being emphasized. And what's being emphasized in this text is the polarity of it, okay? It's the polarity of, number one, the overriding concern of the text is Yahweh's exclusive covenant, his requirement for exclusive covenant loyalty, right? The judgment came as a consequence of the curse, right? Blessings for obedience to the covenant, curses for disobedience. The curses were already pronounced in advance. In Deuteronomy and other places, he could send a drought. And so the bringing of the prophet onto the scene, Elijah, at the very point in the narrative where it's the worst king already in the north, right? Who's offended God the most. You're expecting judgment, right? And Elijah comes on the scene as God's covenant lawyer, and he is going to exercise authority under Yahweh to enact judgment upon the people. It starts with the king, right? And so here comes Elijah into the narrative, and we have a weird intro to the narrative, right? Remember last week, he didn't have the traditional formula. Is Elijah really have authority to do what he's saying he's got authority to do, or is he acting a little bit out of control? Remember, any biblical character who's treated at any length in the text has a capacity for change. And you have to look at them throughout the course of the whole their whole place in the Bible. And so what we're going to see is we're going to see the development of Elijah from special servant to a full-blown prophet. Okay? And that's what we're seeing is we're seeing his development. And we're going to see a lot of that in this text this week. But I just wanted to remind you, this is where we're at the whole scheme of things. In chapter 17 and 18, you're going to see this going on. in this week, in chapter 7 or in chapter 17, verses 17 to 24, there's even this level of detail. And as you're reading it, you're not going to see it. But when I point it out, you will. You'll be, oh, I never saw that. Well, that's because we're not reading it as it was written in Hebrew. We're seeing an English translation of that. And if they just change a couple of words, the way you feel, hear the cadence or feel it, if you were hearing it, you would start to, your ear is attuned to that type of writing. They use that device a lot in the Old Testament, especially in narrative, Old Testament narrative. And so you're more attuned to that, and you would pick up on it. But we can see it now. I'll point it out to you, and I think it could be helpful. So, kind of save the time. Let's get going. So we have two subunits in this text this week. Remember, this is, if chapter 17 is Act 1, we are now in Episode 2, okay? The first episode, Yahweh sends Elijah to Wadi Kareth, Cut Off Creek. In Episode 2, he's going to send him away. So you see what's changing the dialogue here is Yahweh is speaking, okay? He is issuing a command, and then you're anticipating a response. Remember that command response. And Yahweh will issue a promise, or the prophet will, and you're anticipating the fulfillment of that promise. So command response, promise fulfillment. Those are the two elements, okay, that we're seeing. And they're, the way the writer's writing, he's writing so they're very tight. You can see Yahweh makes the command, there's a response. Yahweh makes a promise, there is a fulfillment. Okay? And so the way he staggers those in the text, has there's meaning behind that. So here we have two subsections. We have him sending Elijah out of Wadi Kerith and around Israel, or Israel proper, the northern kingdom, up into Sidon, which is in Phoenicia, right? And he sends him to a widow in Zarephath. And then he will send him, or then the second episode, while he is there, the second half of this, he will, in the first half, he will provide food miraculously. In the second half, he will raise the widow's son who's just died. Okay? So that's what's going to happen. We're going to be in Zarephath today. We've moved. He's kicked him out. We're in episode two. And episode two has part A and part B. Okay? Two parts. That's what we're going to see. All right. So I'm just going to read, or would somebody like to read this right here? Just the widow of Zarephath. That's verses 8 through 16. It's right here on the front page. Does someone want to read that?
I
will. Okay, great.
The widow of Zarephath. Then the word of the Lord came to him. Arise, go to Zarephath, which belongs to Sidon, and dwell there. Behold, I have commanded a widow there to feed you. So he arose and went to Zarephath. And when he came to the gate of the city, behold, a widow was there gathering sticks. And he called to her and said, bring me a little water in a vessel that I may drink. And as she was going to bring it, he called to her and said, bring me a morsel of bread in your hand. And she said, as the Lord your God lives, I have nothing baked, only a handful of flour in a jar and a little oil in a jug. And now I am gathering a couple of sticks that I may go prepare it for myself and my son, that we may eat it and die. And Elijah said to her, do not fear, go and do as you have said. But first make me a little cake of it and bring it to me, and afterward make something for yourself and your son. For thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, the jar of flour shall not be spent, and the jug of oil shall not be empty, until the day the Lord sends rain upon the earth. And she went and did as Elijah said, and she and he and her household ate for many days. The jar of flour was not spent, neither did the jug of oil become empty, according to the word of the Lord that he spoke by Elijah.
Okay. So that's kind of, that's the story, right? And you see that word fulfillment pattern here again, which highlights Elijah's obedient as a prophet. Now we're looking at this in light of the whole Elijah narrative. We know Elijah's a prophet, right? At this point in the narrative, this is your first time to read this. You don't know if he's truly a prophet. He's never been declared a prophet. He's never claimed to be a prophet, only a special servant, right? Narrator's never said he's a prophet. Is Elijah a prophet? Is he presuming too much? You know, he's speaking out of turn. Maybe God's going to correct him too. We just don't know, right? Okay, but so at this point, that's what's going on. And they're using the word fulfillment pattern, promise fulfillment, to show his obedience to Yahweh. But from this point forward, you're going to see subtle indications of Elijah's increasing hesitation to respond obediently to Yahweh's commands. Now, notice again the similarities here between this and the call of Jonah. Okay? In the call of Jonah, it says, now the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, automatically you see how direct that is and how different that is from last week when we saw the call of Elijah, right? The word of the Lord came after Elijah was talking about who he was and what he was there to do. The word of the Lord, that's what is determinative. The word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it, for their evil has come up before me. But Jonah rose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. He went down to Joppa and found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid the fare and went down into it to go with him to Tarshish, away from the presence of the Lord. Jonah has the official call, right? He's declared a prophet right up front. The word of the Lord is what's determinative. But he is fleeing from Yahweh. Elijah, possibly presuming too much about his special status, right? Making some pretty bold claims. However, he is embracing immediately. It's a command and response. It's, you know what I'm saying? Yahweh commands him to go, he goes, right? When you read it in Hebrew, it's very terse. Kum, lech, come, go. And it's an imperative, and it's a immediate response, very terse, right? And so I wanted to point that out. And then we'll see here in verses 10 through 12, the narrator moves the setting into point of view, obviously. We're moving from Cut-Off Creek to Zarephath. And we're going to see this dialogue between Elijah and a new character in the story, the widow from Zarephath. And I'll just point it out, although his commands kind of appear terse, the nature of his response is debated. Some say, hey, Elijah's pretty gruff right here with this widow, right? Others say no, that it wasn't over the top. But I want to focus at this point on the text itself here and just show you a few things. So on the second page of this, kind of get right into the text. You're going to see on the far right, you'll see kind of green, yellow, green, yellow. That's command, right? And then you'll see the promise. Then you see the response to the command in green. And the yellow is the beginning of the fulfillment. So when I've highlighted this in purple, you see that's a recorded speech. I'm trying to give you this. Here's what we got going on. We got the narrator. And when the background's white, that's the narrator, right? When I change the background of this light purple, that's Yahweh speaking. So I put the ESV translation, I put Yahweh's text in purple. All right, kind of royalty. Then it goes narrator again. You see that little green block? That's Elijah speaking. It's quoted speech, okay? Then you see the narrator. Then you see him speak again. So what you're going to notice is there's this polarity. He'll show him speaking twice. He'll show him praying twice and more than just once in these narratives. There's structure here. There's purpose for that. And then you're going to see the widow respond. See that? See that down here on the bottom? That's the widow's response, okay? Well, if you flip the page, you're going to see, because this page and the one behind it actually go together, you're going to see Elijah, and then you're going to see Yahweh, okay? So you see, at a glance, you can kind of get a feel for what's going on. You've got the narrator speaking, and you've got recorded speech of the characters. And in here, we see, right off the bat, it's a command from Yahweh, and you see the response. So it says, and the word of the Lord came to him. So immediately, the word of the Lord setting kind of breaks this unit up. Get up, go to Zarephath. Instead of get up, Jonah, go to Nineveh, right? You see the similarities? Okay, so get up, go to Zarephath, which is for Sidon, which belongs to Sidon. Remember, where's Jezebel from? Jezebel was the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians. So Yahweh is sending Elijah around Israel into the heart of Baal country, right? Into the very heart of Baal country. And you'll notice how many times he'll say, well, Yahweh, king of Israel. No, Yahweh is king of everything, right? And he's going to send Elijah in the middle of a drought to the very capital of the seat of power of Baal, the storm god, who hasn't been able to bring rain because of the drought, and he's going to send Elijah there. And there's a lot of irony in here about what's going on. And so he says, which belongs to Sidon, and dwell there. Behold, I have commanded a widow to feed you there. Now there's some irony, right? He's going to send Elijah from Cut Off Creek, being fed by, remember how he changed, did the fronting thing, with the irony of being fed from a dry brook, a seasonal stream in a drought, okay, that's miraculous, and being fed by unclean animals, crows, that's miraculous. Now he's going to send him to Zarephath in the hometown of, or the home turf of Baal, in the middle of the drought, and he's going to sustain him by a widow. And widows, what do they got? They got nothing, right? And not only that, she's not even Jewish, right? I mean, she's a Gentile of Gentiles living up there in Baal's town. I mean, and he's going to send Elijah to her, that widow, and through, and Yahweh's going to provide for all of them, right? Provide for Elijah through her. It's irony. And we're not supposed to miss out on that.
When
and
she so, said they were going to die, did that mean they were starving?
Like yes.
They were literally starving.
Okay. Yeah, and you pick up that here. We'll pick that up here in the text real quick.
I'm sorry.
It's fine. And so and he says, so you see Elijah, and it says immediately, Vayakum, he got up. You see how these words, and he got up, and he went, and he came. You see that Hebrew narrative? That's that, what they call it, WCI. That's that boom, boom, boom. You see the action. And then you see something off the line. It's not furthering action, but you can see all these verbs are just boom, 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 boom. Okay? Well, he's stacking them up. He's stacking them up, and I'll show you how in a second. But and he got up, and he went. He's, the response is verbatim to the command. And he got up, and he went, and he came to the gate of the city, and behold, look. Well, to his surprise. That's kind of the feeling you would get if you're reading. Behold, it's like, and guess what? There's a widow gathering sticks. And the words are kind of woods. I mean, gathering woods. She's gathering up a little bit of sticks, a couple of sticks. And he called her and he said, take. It's a command. Take, please, from me. Bring me a little water in a vessel so that I can drink. That's kind of, I mean, if you think about that, right? I mean, I'd be like, look at this widow woman, right? I mean, you're thinking, what is this dude Elijah about? I mean, you ought to be, if it's your first time, you'd be thinking, this guy is not a good dude. Right? He's not, we're not buddies. He says, take, bring me a little vessel, a little bit of water. And then he went to take it. And look, he makes the command, and guess what? Look at her response. So it's not just Yahweh to Elijah. Now we've got the story kind of growing a little bit and expanding. And so Elijah is commanding her, right? Take, bring. And she went to take and fetch it. And he called to her and he said, take. Please, for me, a morsel of bread in your hand. And then we're expecting the response. And what we get from her is an oath formula. So the story is just taken another level. It's added a layer. Okay, we call them registers. Right? So what you got to realize here is that there's this, in the big sense of things, there's Yahweh versus Baal. Right? There is king versus prophet. Elijah versus Ahab. There is now a new character in the scene. There is widow, right? We're going to see the next time we do this, it's Obadiah is brought into the scene, okay? But you see this layering of characters, and there's layering. We're going to see there's some, you can look at this story through these different lenses and gather not a different meaning, but nuances of meaning. The story is that deep and rich. Is that what I'm saying? We could focus upon the widow and see her progression through the narrative, and we can glean some sense of meaning from it. We can do the same thing if we focus upon Elijah and his development as a character. Ultimately, what we want to see is what God is doing, because he is the ultimate protagonist in the story, right? And so by looking at these different characters and reflecting on what God's doing in and through them, we can see what God is doing behind the scenes. And that's what we're trying to get to ultimately. So he says, look what she says. As the Lord your God lives. That's her oath. I have nothing baked, only a handful of flour in a jar and a little oil in a jug, and now I'm gathering a couple of sticks. And if you read it in the Hebrew, it said it would be like, and I will soon go, and I will soon make her prepare for me and my son, and we will soon eat it, and we will soon die. Okay, that's the sense of it. We are getting ready to do that right now. I mean, literally, their last supper, right?
Yeah.
And so it's very emphatic. If you flip the page, you'll see here. And Elijah said to her, do not fear. Go and do as you said. Do not fear. If you read the Gospels very long, you're going to hear that. Do not fear. Right? Gave you a couple examples there in Mark and John. Do not fear. Go and do as you have said. But first, how bad can Elijah get? But first, make me a little cake of it.
Yeah.
Go and die, just like you said. But first, make me a little cake of it. I mean, if you're listening to this, somebody needs to just take Elijah out, right?
Don't say it around our house.
You're funny.
I love it.
Elijah's been a short story.
He says, and afterward, make something for yourself and your son, for thus says the Lord. Now he's going to bring God into this, right? So was Elijah speaking out of turn here? Maybe. For thus says the Lord. Here comes the prophetic word formula. Now we're getting Yahweh's speech. So we're going to question once again, is Elijah kind of out of bounds? He says, the jar of flour shall not be spent, and the jug of oil shall not be empty until the day that the Lord sends rain upon the earth. Okay, wait a minute. If you remember in the very first last week, we said, Elijah said, there will not be rain except by my word. Right? Now all of a sudden he's saying, until the day the Lord sends rain upon the earth. What's going on? He's revising that first promise. That's a subtle jab. It's showing you, hey, something's going on with Elijah, okay? And it, now we're going to see that synopsis, resumption, expansion technique again here at the end. We're going to see her counter response. And so, because he said, do not fear, go and do. And so now she's going to finally respond. So the narrator skips that to give you a sense of whoop, and then he resumes back where he was. And she went and she did it as Elijah said. So now Elijah is commanding authority for the first time in the narrative, right? Elijah is exercising authority and speaking on behalf of Yahweh, but he's still not considered to be a prophet. And she went, she did, and they ate. And so now he's justified, right? Yahweh's actions have justified Elijah's statements. The jar of flour was not spent, neither did the oil become empty, according to the word of the Lord that he spoke by Elijah. You see what the narrator's doing? He is pointing you to the fact that Yahweh's word is determinative. And we're trying to figure out where Elijah is in the will of Yahweh. And Elijah is trying to figure that out probably too at this point, because his character is being developed into a prophet, from special servant to prophet. And in here, in the notes, if you read it, you'll see That's the true miracle here. Elijah's being transformed into a prophet. God's word is determinative, not man's. Elijah has learned his place in the scheme of things. Now, I'm going to quickly note the similarities between this unit and Jesus' ministry in John chapter 4, in verses 7 to 10. It's the story of Jesus and the woman at Samaria, right? Which is not far from where we're actually at, if you look at it. And a woman from Samaria came to draw water. Jesus said to her, give me a drink. For his disciples had gone into the city to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, how is it that you, a Jew, ask a drink from me, a woman of Samaria? For Jews have no dealings with Samarians or Samaritans. Didn't have any dealings with women from Zarephath either, right? From Sidon and Phoenicia. Jesus answered, if you knew the gift of God, who it was saying to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water. So you're familiar with the narrative, right? Jesus said, the woman said to him, in the end, the woman says to Jesus, sir, give me this water so that I will not be thirsty or have to come to draw water, here to draw water. So, see the similarities? There's some vague similarities here, right? There are some vague similarities with what's going on with Jonah. We're going to see more of this. Let's keep rolling. If we got time, I hope. Okay. So let's keep moving. Now we're going to have part B, or act two, episode 2B here of this act. And so you get that discourse marker. Vayehi. After this, the son of the woman, the mistress of the house, became ill. And the illness was so severe that there was no breath left in him. Okay. In the gloss, there remained no breath in him. Okay. And the mistress said to Elijah, what have you against me, O man of God? So she calls him a man of God, not a prophet, but a man of God, right? You have come to me, A, to bring my sin to remembrance, and B, to cause the death of my son. And so, your presence basically has drawn attention to me and my plight and my sin in my life. And your God, right? And see, your God has brought judgment. You brought judgment upon me from your God. Now think about this in terms of the widow. Right? She's not a follower of Yahweh, right? The question is she going to be? And so let's see what happens. And so now we have, you see the dynamic threads going on. Now we've got the, what's going to happen with the widow? What's going on with Elijah? What's God doing behind the scenes? Right? Jezebel and Ahab just kind of just made a brief appearance basically at the very first of the narrative. You're not going to hear from them for a while, but it's in the back burner, right? So it's getting, they're stacking layers of complexity in the narrative. And he says, okay. And he said to her, give me your son. Remember that two times he spoke, Elijah? He's giving her to speak twice again, right? Give me your son. Okay? Now, remember, I'm going to point this out while we're in here, because if I don't, you'll miss it. But when I said there was structure in this section, speech by the widow, what did she say? Man of God. Oh, man of God. Right? We just read that. Well, if you look on the next page, now at the very end, you're going to see a speech by the widow that ends this whole section. And what does she say? Now that I know that you are a man of God. You see that? That parallelism? Yes, watch how tight it gets. Then you have a speech by Elijah. Give me your son, right? See that speech by Elijah? Give me your son right here. Flip back to the last page and guess what you're going to see? Speech by Elijah. See, your son lives. Okay? Let's look at the next one. Elijah takes the boy from his mother. That's verse 17, 19b. Elijah takes, and he took him from her arms. Right? And if you flip the page, and he gave him to his mother. This is very dense. You see how dense this is? I mean, we're going to keep going. Elijah brings him up to his own room. And he took him from her, and he took her, carried him up to the upper room, which he was staying there. And over on the next page, and he took him down from the upper room. You see how dense the parallelism is here? What is going on? Well, in the very center of it, you're going to see two statements, right? In the very center of that, you see two statements. And those two statements are Elijah's prayer, twofold prayer to Yahweh. Okay? Right here. It's focusing you in on this, on the actual resurrection of the child. Right? Now think about that. In terms of the top layer of this narrative, Yahweh is demonstrating that he has the power over life and death. Not only does he have power over life and death, unlike Baal, he has power of life and death everywhere, not just within Israel. He's not local. He's not limited to the land of Israel. He's over everything. He is the Lord of lords, the King of kings. He is the God of gods, right? And he has all power. Then if you take the narrative back just a little bit, you're going to see these two prayers, and you start to question, what's the difference in the prayers? In the first prayer, look what Elijah says. Or in the first he's saying, in the first prayer he says, O Lord my God, have you brought calamity even upon the widow with whom I sojourn? Is he blaming God? Some commentators say that he is actually blaming God. And it's wrong to do that here. Okay? In Hebrew it says, Yahweh my God, also on the widow who I'm dwelling with as an alien, you are causing to be. You are causing evil to come upon her by causing her son, or causing to die her son. That's what the Hebrew literally says. It's strong. It's a strong accusation. Elijah is accusing God of killing her son. And on top of that, who you sent me to stay with. Okay? Now, some would say Elijah's wrong. Others would say, no, Elijah is showing you the role of a sympathetic, prophetic mediator. He is empathetic. He is mediating between the people and God. And he is saying, on their behalf, this is how they feel. I am representing them. But I truly know who you are. Right? Now, you're going to start to see this as priming the narrative for what's going to happen as we get to Mount Carmel. Right? We're going to see two speeches, two prayers. We're going to see one response, two response. All of this is tying together. It's not just one localized story. Okay? And so the writer's building up suspense for future narratives. But you got to start to question what's going on with Elijah. This isn't right? at least in tone, right? Could be applied. It says, and he stretched himself upon the child three times, and he called Yahweh, and he said, second prayer, Yahweh, my God, let it return, please, the life of the child into this, or into his midst. So, did Yahweh respond to the first prayer or to the second? The first petition or the second? You say it's one prayer, two petitions, but did he respond to the first petition and the second when he responded, or just to the second? Okay, narrator's reticent, right? Doesn't tell us. Once again, that's going to happen again when we get to the peak narrative on Mount Carmel. Okay, he is showing you a pattern, what's going on. There's more going on. He's going to draw more characters in the story and make it more complex. Here in the end, we're going to see what he's focusing upon is resurrection. He's also showing Elijah growing as a character. At the very end here of the narrative, he returns to her son. He says, see, your son lives. And the woman said to Elijah, now, I'm going to read it in the ESV first. Now I know, A, that you are a man of God, still not prophet, right? And B, that the word of the Lord in your mouth is truth. So, in the Hebrew, it's more bold. Now indeed, I know, because this miracle is greater than you providing food. Right? Now I really know that you are a man of God, right? Well, just say prophet, would you? But she doesn't, right? And so you are a man of God because you raised my son from the dead. And that's a much bigger thing than providing the food. And Elijah so Elijah technically is a true prophet, but she won't say it. Neither will the narrator. And then she says, the word the word of the Lord in your mouth is truth. Now I'm going to read the gloss from the Hebrew. And the word of Yahweh in your mouth is trustworthy or truth. So what is she saying? Is she saying that, is she emphasizing Elijah as a prophet being faithful to God and Yahweh? Or is she emphasizing that Yahweh is God and that his word is truth? You see how slight that is? Which side of are you going to emphasize? Most commentators are going to argue that she's emphasizing, not because of the slight to Elijah, not saying he's a prophet, you are a man of God, but it's the word of Yahweh that is true. And it is in your mouth. I believe that. I'm not calling you a prophet, but you see, this is a Sidonian widow woman, and she's recognizing the truth about Yahweh. You see that? So there's a progression in her. She's going to leave the narrative now. We're going to have a new narrative, you know, about new characters coming in and going out. But you're seeing that. So if you'll look in our handout, I don't know how much time we have here, but I'm going to take it real quick to page 37, Mark chapter 7. Mark, here we go. The Syrophoenician woman's faith. Okay? And from here he arose and went to the region of Tyre and Sidon. Guess where we're at in our story? And he entered a house and did not want anyone to know, yet he could not be hidden. But immediately a woman whose little daughter, this time daughter, had an unclean spirit, heard of him and came and fell down at his feet. Now the woman was a Gentile, a Syrophoenician by birth. And she begged him to cast the demon out of her daughter. And he said to her, let the children be fed first. Sorry, Elijah. For it is not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. But she answered him, yes, Lord, yet even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs. And he said to her, for this statement you may go your way. The demon has left her daughter. And she went home and found her child lying in bed and the demon gone. Okay? There is a play here on these prior stories. Now, Jesus is not giving us a commentary on every level of the story, but he is using one layer of this story to impart a particular truth, right? And we see that now it changes. I want to take you right down here. Look at Luke chapter 4, on page 38. Jesus is coming into the very beginning of his public ministry, right? We're at the very beginning of his public ministry. And he comes into his own hometown, right? Think about Elijah. He wasn't in Israel, was he? He was sent out of Israel. I'm gonna for the sake of time, he came to Nazareth, he'd been brought up in his custom. He went to the synagogue on the Sabbath. They stood up and read from Isaiah, from the scroll of Isaiah. And he's basically, and he says, you know, I'm here to, you know, to proclaim liberty to the captives and recovering sight to the blind. And it says, and he rolled up the scroll and gave it back to the attendant and sat down, and the eyes of all in the synagogue were fixed on him. And he began to say to them, today this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing. And all spoke well of him and marveled at the gracious words that were coming from his mouth and said, is this not Joseph's son? And he said to them, doubtless you will quote to me the proverb, physician, heal yourself. What we have heard you did at Capernaum, do here in your own hometown as well. And he said, this is his response, truly I say to you, no prophet is acceptable in his hometown. But in truth, I tell you, there were many widows in Israel in the days of Elijah, when the heavens were shut up 3 years and 6 months, and a great famine came over all the land. And Elijah was sent to none of them, but only to Zarephath in the land of Sidon, to a woman who was a widow. He is smoking them, right? God, he's Lord over everyone, Jew and Gentile, right? And these people are getting mad about it. They're mad about, what are they mad at Jesus for? Because he's going to give them the gospel, right? Because he's going to preach the gospel to someone who's not a Jew. He's mad. They're mad. They want to kill him, right? And he brings up Elisha next, and I'm going to move on down to Jonah. Now, see the similarities in Jonah. Jonah was written after this story in Kings, right? Jonah was written later. Jonah's reflecting actually back on Elijah's story. And Jesus is reflecting upon both, right? So you see the complexity starts to stack up when you see Jesus using influences from both stories. But I'm just going to read this real quick. And Jonah says, here at the bottom of verse 38, but it displeased Jonah exceedingly, and he was angry, and he prayed to the Lord and said, O Lord, is this not what I said when I was yet in my country? That is why I fled to Tarshish, for I knew that you are a gracious and merciful, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and relenting from disaster. Therefore now, O Lord, take my life from me, for it is better for me to die. And the Lord said to him, do you do well to be angry? You see the same pattern here? What's he mad about? God being gracious to people who aren't Jews. There's a lot going on here. When you start to see the use of the Old Testament, the New Testament authors, the way that they use Old Testament stories, and how they will take facets of those stories and develop them in their arguments about what's going on, it's rich, right? And so I would just encourage you to kind of read back through some of that. I think you'll get a lot from it. Is that helpful? All right, we better get out of here. We're going to get in trouble.
Yep.
All right. Love you guys. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Jesus. Bless our time together. All right.
Stop the recording.